Welcome to season 4 of our podcast, Nature Bounce, brought to you by Go Jauntly, a walking, wayfinding, and nature connection app available for free on the App Store and the Play Store. Nature Bounce is hosted by me, Hannah Such, co-founder and CEO at Go Jauntly. This podcast is an opportunity for us to banter and share learnings and insights with you and a series of truly inspirational people we've met on our journey. We'll talk green living, nature, walking, well-being, and more. If you like what you hear, please do rate and subscribe to the whole series. Go Jauntly is an everyday walking app designed to inspire you to walk more and get out and about in enjoying nature. Whether you stomp, roam, ramble, hike, or wander, we have unlimited walking trails for you to enjoy. You can download our free walking app and enjoy your very own pocket-sized encyclopedia of urban walks. Search Go Jauntly on your app store. On today's episode, we'll be chatting to Hera Khan Adigan. She's head of Carfree Cities at Possible, a climate change charity. Her role includes kickstarting the process of making private cars obsolete in our cities, accelerating the move to a zero carbon Britain built by and for everyone. She's passionate about designing sustainable futures that center social justice, human rights, and community cohesion. Let's find out more. Welcome to the show, Hera. It's so nice to meet you. Finally, I've been following you on Twitter for quite a while.
Oh, thanks, Hannah. It's lovely to meet you as well. It's nice to like turn online friends into like a real friend.
Yeah, still online. Yeah, that is my goal in life through Twitter.
Yeah, so I am the head of Carfree Cities at the climate action charity Possible. And our vision is for a zero carbon Britain built by and for everyone. And one of the ways we think we can do that is by, transforming our cities and giving space back to people and nature. And moving away from mass private car dependency. And so how I got into all of that is, I'm a city girl kind of through and through. I was born in Lahore in Pakistan, and I was brought over to London when I was a baby. And I've just kind of lived in London my whole life. And I think from a really young age, I think, the environment has been plugged as like a great issue for our generation and generations to come. But it's always been interesting to me how cities and city life has almost been excluded from that conversation. But particularly when I was younger, less so now. I think, many, many years later, we've kind of moved on from that. But cities, I think, are really the heart of communities. They're the heart of sort of thriving lives. Millions and millions of people live in cities. And I think, in the next couple of years, it's sort of like 80% of the UK population will live in cities. And so, I think that's like kind of where I'm coming from with the kind of all of this work. But I think the reality is the car is so entrenched within the fabric of British culture, and it has been for so long, kind of since World War II. It's sort of shaped our history. And most people in the UK today still have access to a car. I think car ads really fuel that. They kind of put on these rose-tinted glasses, and it's like they never show other cars in car ads. They never show people sat in traffic or the reality of what it's like to own a car in a city where even driving a car is very stressful. It's a burden to have to think about this huge, valuable property that you have and insure it and find parking for it and kind of sit in traffic and wash it and, it's not a pleasant way to move about in a city, but it is sort of deeply within the fabric of Britain still. And I would say the way we got there was because of the oil lobby and the car lobby having very close relationships with our governments and successive governments, no one particular government. But that has policy implications that lock us into our cars. And so I guess if it's policy that has made us get into this state, it's policy that can also take us out. And so with the you know, COVID lockdowns and the current cost of living crisis that's going on, we do have an opportunity and a chance. And I think people are rethinking their relationships with their cars and the way they use their cars.
I remember when I first learned to drive, oh, it was such a good feeling because I was kind of trapped on a campus at uni, and I couldn't get to where I needed to get to. So I was missing out on so much fun. And so back then, let's say late 90s, early noughties, it was like a real symbol of freedom for me. We didn't have iPhones then, so it was a real struggle, like navigating, you know, you'd have to kind of pull over and look at the London A to Z and stuff like that. So it wasn't easy, but now it feels like driving is so much easier in terms of like knowing where to go, getting from A to B, getting there as quick as possible. However, there's everything that comes with it, which is clogged roads, air pollution, cars rat running, and all that kind of thing. So it's really changed in just 20 years.
Yeah, no, and I think that's it's kind of the more people that own cars, we only have a limited amount of space on the road. So I think year on year, we have seen congestion increase within the UK, and that's because the number of cars, there just are so many more cars. And ultimately, there's not room on the roads for everyone to own a car. It's not possible. And certainly, you know, I mean, I've got to take this back to the climate crisis. You know, we've seen we need to reduce our carbon emissions, and transport emissions make up over a third of our carbon emissions. And within that, private cars are the biggest contributor to our transport emissions. And so we know we have to cut our car use. And if we know we have to do that, it obviously makes the most sense to do that in cities where, you know, people live in much closer densities. You do have much more access, I guess, to all the amenities that you need than you do in rural areas, where I think that argument is a lot harder to make. I'm not saying that there isn't a role and a space for cars. There obviously are, and I think there's an argument to be made that there are certain types of roles that particularly need cars. But it's just, do people need to own cars? I would say for the majority of the time, no. And I would like to see people really taking up the idea of things like car clubs, where if the car is sat unused for 95% of the time, then you know, make use of that 5% of the time when you actually need it by joining a car club.
Yeah, makes sense. It's such a shame because there was this big boom in sort of car clubs and shares, like, was it maybe like 10 years ago? And there must have been a lot of lobbying and buying up of companies for that to have kind of disappeared a little bit. You still get a couple, don't you? But there's not that many anymore.
I remember when there was a big sort of advertising push, I think, around car companies. I think people, like, it's like with anything. And I think that's kind of why the car, you know, like I said, it's not just political, it's also cultural. It's because once people are used to doing things a certain way, it's a habit, and it's really it's difficult to kind of break them out of that. Mm. And car clubs are, you know, if you're unfamiliar with how a car club works, you will find it a little bit, it'll just be new. So you'll have to learn from scratch. How do you book one? What do I need to do? Et cetera, et cetera. So I think get organized. I think we just need to see a bit more support, really, and I would like to see councils actually do more to push car clubs within their constituencies.
I was reading this article by John Vidal. He's like The Guardian's former environment editor, and he wrote that the worldwide love affair with the car, which promised consumers convenience, status and freedom, is over. Do you think that's the case globally?
No.
Yeah. I had a feeling you might say that.
I mean, I think, again, we're getting there in certain places. And we have this beautiful map that we did, where we were looking at traffic reduction measures from across the world, from all the continents, and you know, sharing the successes there. So I think across the world, governments recognize, or, you know, experts recognize that if everyone has a car, what you'll get is congestion and roadblock and health disaster. And of course, it's feeding the climate crisis. But it's kind of going back to what we said, how do you unpick the cultural fabric of particularly Western nations that have been built on the idea of the car giving autonomy? And, you know, when you have something like Tracy Chapman's Fast Car as like a kind of critical, like, I always think about that.
Driving home for Christmas.
It's just like, we need to start creating alternative narratives, really. I want a revolutionary song that equates Tracy Chapman's Fast Car with like walking or cycling. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good challenge. I love that. Yeah, I do think that, because I used to love the song Driving Home for Christmas by Chris Vera, and I'd put it on when I used to drive home for Christmas, and now I'm like, ugh, no way. But listen, one of the things that I'm conscious of is that you can be a car owner or driver and still detest cars. And I think that's almost like part of the journey to kind of voluntarily giving it up, like switching out journeys. That are habitual, that actually could be walked in 20 minutes instead of being driven in 5 to 10 minutes. Like,
hi, it's Shane here. Today, the feature I want to highlight is our Bristol Tranquility Scores. This is an exclusive feature for people walking in Bristol, created in partnership with our friends at Tranquil City and Bristol City Council. If you're using the walking map in Bristol, you'll see a little score beside the duration of your route, which rates how tranquil the route is. It's calculated using a number of factors, including street design, green space quality, and air and noise pollution. Check it out and join us in shifting to a more sustainable and healthier way of city living. Loads of great premium walks have been added to the app recently, so I couldn't choose just one to feature today. I'm going to mention a couple. The first is Norwich Nooks and Crannies, a three-part walk taking in the many hidden passageways and historic buildings of Norwich. There's also the Dover History and Beachfront Walk, which takes you past a bunch of historical sites in Dover Town Center, as well as the Seafront Promenade. Or maybe the Fackenden Down to Mount Vineyard Walk is more your speed. It's a circular nature reserve route ending at a vineyard with tasty food. You can access these routes and many more by upgrading to premium. Gently.
What are the tips and tricks to kind of ditch it?
So this is really interesting, because back in January we did a little experiment where we took 10 regular drivers, people who would identify themselves as drivers, and you know, most of them were parents, some of them were disabled. And we basically said to them, great, give up your car for 3 weeks. And we paid them to use alternatives. You know, we paid for their buses, their e-scooters, their cycles. We even got some of them cycle training. And at the end of the 3 weeks, we basically said to people, right, so, you know, how did it go? How did you find it? And it was amazing how... you know, two people off the back of that sold their car because it was such a transformative experience.
Oh my God,
for them.
That's amazing.
One of them, actually, they sent a message the other day saying, I sold my car, and they sent us a picture of putting solar panels on their roof. And they were like, I use this money to put solar panels on the top of my roof, which is just an amazing story. But even the people who didn't give up their cars recognized that they had got into the habit of using their cars for every little trip, because that is the trick with a car. If you have it, you're way more likely to use it, because it's almost like you paid for it anyway. It's just sort of sitting there. And if you're not using it, people conceptualize it as a bit of a waste. So one of the key things that we did, and I think it's really... it was actually mind-blowing a little bit for us, because I didn't know that this would happen. But there is this underlying assumption that using a car is cheaper. It's cheaper for people involved. But when we looked at the data, most people actually saved money by using alternatives. And that's because when people think about the car, they don't think, they kind of, they factor in fuel costs, but they're not factoring the true cost of owning the car. They're not factoring in, I mean, the original, you know, thousands of pounds potentially that you paid on the car, the insurance, the road tax, if you pay for a parking, then a parking permit, and then the fuel, and then, you know, if something goes wrong with the car, the cost of paying with that. And when you total all of that up, it's a huge financial investment. And so when we present, and I don't think, you know, they kind of say this themselves, they didn't really think about that. They kind of assumed once they bought the car that it's free, in quotation marks.
Yeah, prepaid or something like that. Yeah. I guess if you're hiring on a license, then that does feel like you've paid for it in advance, doesn't
it? Exactly. And you and that's the kind of trick with a kind of car club, is because all of those costs are sort of factored in the per, you know, like the per minute, so to speak, you'll kind of weigh up the cost a lot more and say, oh, well, if I'm just going around the corner, you're unlikely to use the car because that cost is very prominent. Whereas if you own that car, that cost is not very prominent because you fill up your tank for, you know, I don't even want to talk about numbers nowadays because the fuel crisis is very, very serious, but you would just fill up your regular amount regardless of how, and then you kind of just use it during the week. So I think one of the key things is to make it much more prominent to people, the actual cost, and treat the car as a financial burden rather than seeing it as a sort of a financial a benefit. That was the first thing. And I think the other thing is reframing, it's that kind of the stories we tell, reframing how we think about our time and how we value our sense of space. I would say we all have really, really busy lives. And, you know, I remember one of the participants was, you know, it's maybe a 20 minute journey for her to drive to get into work. It would take her an hour on the bus. But what she found was in that hour on the bus, it gave her time to kind of just think about the day ahead, mentally prepare, unwind a little bit, even at the top of the bus with a window view, in a way that she can't with the car because she is concentrating, she is driving. And what does that do to your sense of well-being? That's I think another key component, like walking, cycling, using public transport, getting out and about. It might not be the quickest, but is it ultimately better for you?
Yeah.
And those are sort of, I think, some of the kind of triggers and levers that we need to start pulling on.
The reframing point, I think, is really important, because if you've got a hire purchase car and you feel that you've paid for it, you aren't necessarily going to think that you're saving money, and you might not want to spend money jumping on a Lime bike or something.
Yeah.
So that reframing bit seems like quite a big challenge, but also maybe linked to policy, like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, totally. I mean, what I would say is we only took 10 people. I think what it did do was I was expecting to find that most people didn't save money. And I think my whole team did, because the assumption is always using a car is just cheaper. It's just cheaper. So to find that actually 8 out of 10 of our participants saved money was kind of a revelation to us. And so I'm not saying that everyone will save money, but just challenge that assumption a little bit, and like properly cost out how much a car is costing you. And I bet there are vast amounts of people who would save money by giving it up.
Yeah.
And on the point of,
especially,
you know,
paying, in cities.
Especially, and that's it. So I think whenever I talk about, you know, car-free cities, people, well, first of all, they gasp because the term car-free is just so scary.
Radical.
And I always have to caveat. Yeah, I do have to caveat it. And I'm kind of like, you know, we don't mean a city without any cars at all. We recognize there's some disabled people, you know, there's some people like carers, there's some people who will still need to use their cars.
100%.
But if everyone who doesn't need to use their cars would use an alternative, that means there is much more space for those who do need it to use, to you know, get around safely and conveniently. But kind of going back to like paying people to cycle, we spend 32 billion on you know, road building exercises in the UK. And there's just some recent research that was put out that, you know, for the cost of 2.3 billion, something like that, you could give all adults in the UK free bus travel. So it's like a fraction of the cost that we spend on building roads to and so that's why I go back to, this is all ideological. It actually probably wouldn't cost that much to pay people to cycle. It wouldn't cost that much to give people free bus travel in comparison to our current mode of method, which is to keep people in their cars.
Yeah, it's really frustrating because you kind of hear about the amount that's spent on roads, and then you're like, oh yeah, so Active Travel England have allocated 2 billion to try and target 50% of all urban journeys being conducted by Active Travel. It just kind of pales into insignificance when you're talking billions, doesn't it?
Yeah. But also, like, I think that's what's key, is if you take that number on its own, 2 billion might sound like quite a lot, but put it in comparison to what we've been spending on road building and what we've been spending on car infrastructure, it does pale into, it just pales in comparison. And I think if our political leaders are taking the climate crisis seriously, they need to put their money where their mouth is, really.
Yeah. Well, we shouldn't talk politics because for listeners, we're in the crisis right now as we're recording, and it's quite depressing, and everyone I speak to is like either sad, ill, worried, or just fed up with everything. Myself included. Nature is the only thing that's healing me right now, which is actually a nice segue, because one of the things about driving is that you don't get to connect with nature. Okay, you can see the clouds and the sun kind of blaring in, but is that a good experience in nature? I'm not so sure. Like, it can help you get to places, especially if you're going to the great outdoors, but actually in cities and urban areas where people live, where it's harder to get out to those places, you know, like, we should be kind of, I don't know, rewilding our cities, in my opinion, and like really making the most and investing in our green spaces, because on those like little incidental journeys or those walking trips, actually it can really benefit well-being. And you touched on that earlier about having sort of time and space in nature.
Yeah, 100%. And I think when the COVID lockdowns happened, I think it really struck a nerve, because we saw particularly parks are kind of locked away in urban spaces. And when we have like loads of people who live in tower blocks and don't have access to green space, and that is their only access to green space, it really hit a nerve how green space is treated as a bit of a luxury in cities, and it, rather than, you know, access to nature being a human right. And I think especially for people in cities, it needs to be built into cities rather than like, you know, like exclude, like being like this is city and all we get is concrete. And I have to take a daily walk every day in some greenery. I'm super, super lucky that where I live, there's Tower Hamlets Cemetery Park, which is...
I love it there.
Beautiful.
It's magic.
It's absolutely beautiful. There's also sort of three green mills quite nearby me. Do go. It's really, really lovely. There's a little walk by the canals there. And I have to do that every day, a good hour walk to some, you know, otherwise we're just sat on our screens the whole time, hunched over. Kind of center yourself and center your sense of place in the world by being in nature.
So do you think that your sort of method of nature connection is like a daily walk for you? What do you do on that walk normally?
Normally I'm by myself. I've got some music in and I'm just walking, and I'm taking it, and it's quite a slow pace. I do take like, you know, about an hour of my day. I think it is, what I notice is when I go straight into an area where there's a lot of greenery, my pace changes in a way where when I'm on the pavement surrounded by traffic, the pace speeds up, and it is a subconscious thing. It's about how, where your body feels safe and where your body feels it has room to exist, I suppose, is one of the things. And I recently went on sort of like a guided walk through, we were kind of having a look at Hyde Park Corner, and how we would reimagine it.
Oh,
and we
God, went please through... can you reimagine it? It's this awful round there.
We are. Look out for that come November. We'll be releasing like some really cool images. But that was something that we noticed, like when you're in the parks, you're sort of, your pace is so much slower, your rhythm is slower, you're calmer. As soon as you come out and you see the busyness of cars, and
you've got these, is just a nightmare, isn't it? It's just a nightmare.
And you've got these sort of like timed pedestrian lights, which kind of tell you when you can walk and when you cannot. And it sort of stops you from, it's like, it's not your own rhythm anymore. It's sort of decided for you. So yeah, that's sort of my way of unwinding and connecting with nature.
Lovely. Thank you for sharing that. One of the things that I found really interesting and quite scary is that it's 7 times more polluted inside a car compared to outside a car. So even when you're walking on a busy, horrendous road like Park Lane, it's actually still better for you, which is nuts to be outside of the car.
Yeah.
So like, if we can reimagine those spaces, not only will it hopefully encourage more walking, but we'll get to the point where the air will be cleaner, we'll be able to rewild Marble Arch and like all of those things that you know, that's just like my utopia that I dream of.
That's the utopia we're trying to create, and I think that's the key. Like, I always go back to, you know, who are we doing this for? When we talk about people who use their cars not because they need to use their cars, but it's just habitual, or you know, the actual air, the toxic air that's being created, is harmful not only to yourself but also to people who have no other alternative. Like, they maybe they are professional drivers, they're delivery drivers, they have to drive, they have to be on the road, and they are disproportionately breathing harmful air day in, day out, because that's part of their job. So it's sort of like, a how do we create a system that's better for everyone, including those who have to drive?
Yeah, that's so true. That's a really great way of putting it. So you're not only making it equitable for people on the streets, but people in the cars as well, because they have to breathe in less fumes from other people. Oh, that's really fascinating. Thank you for sharing that. So you've kind of given us a few tips about what might be coming. I'm really excited about Hyde Park Corner. What else are you up to? Is there anything else you can share or that we can kind of keep an eye out on?
So I would say keep an eye out on, now this isn't going to sound very sexy at all, but it's important. We're going to be doing some fantastic work on parking policy, because...
Does sound sexy.
I'm sure, like, you know, people might know that we run this amazing campaign on parklets, and parklets are basically taking a parking space and turning it into a space for communities. It's a space, really, it's an opportunity for you to use it however you want, but it doesn't include a car in it. But the other side of that coin is parking policy. And why is it at the moment that we, you know, regardless of whether you own a car or not, and in cities, particularly inner cities, most people don't own cars. If you take London as an example, 60%, 70% of people without cars in inner city boroughs. And yet, if you looked at the curbside, it would be almost 100% lined with cars. And that is completely inequitable.
It's ugly as well. That's what I see them and I just think, oh, you're so ugly. Even though you're status symbols, you're all so ugly.
Yeah. No, that's exactly it. So it's sort of it's not just ugly, but it's like, why are we giving space to people to store their private property public land for free? Well, you got to pay a little bit, but nowhere near as much as you would have to pay if you wanted to turn it into something else. That was another bit of research.
That's true.
So basically, we're going to be doing some work on parking policy. And it is the flip side of the coin of doing things like parklets and having more cycle storage, or having, you know, a space to dock e-scooters, for example, you know. So that I'm really excited about. That's upcoming. And we mentioned Hyde Park Corner already. It's not just Hyde Park Corner. We have 4 fantastic visions coming out very soon, in the new year. We've spoken to loads of experts about the future of our cities. We're doing design, community design workshops in Birmingham, Bristol, Leeds, and London. And we'll be producing, and all of that will kind of feed into producing these radical visions of our cities gone car-free. What would it look like? What would it feel like? How would it operate? And we'll be launching that in the new year. So to help people on the journey to kind of reimagine.
This is the stuff we need right now, because I feel so full of hope when I hear, I know it's going to be hard and very, very tricky and a lot of work, but I do feel full of hope when I hear things like that. I really like the idea of like little community gardens where car parks used to be, not just parklets, but, you know, like vegetable patches, herb patches, bike storage. Yes, I might actually use my bike if I didn't have to lug it through my house. There's all those things that we could just make things so much better and easier. And I think like the play streets as well, we've just started doing play streets on our street, and it is wild. It's actually the kids just love it. They just bomb it up and down, cycling up and down non-stop. You know, they're playing like you used to play in the late 80s and 90s. Like, I remember doing that, and there were hardly ever any cars around. You'd be like the odd other every other person, and I could just bomb it up and down the street. So that's really nice. Like, you could have more of those.
Exactly. That's exactly it. We need more spaces for people to play, to walk, to exist. You know, that's kind of what I was talking about before, like going back to how, you know, in nature you feel like you exist. That's what we need, more space for people to exist.
Yeah, that's true. And also, when you're in nature, well, for me anyway, I feel more connected with the rest of the natural world. I feel like I'm not apart from it. And I've been on my own sort of nature connection journey over the last years. But, you know, when you're in a street, when you're hemmed in, there's like loads of pavement parking, which is legit where I am. There's signs that say you can do it, but you just feel like claustrophobic, don't you? And stuff like this, like, I don't know, especially with the cars, they're all massive now. Yeah. And, but yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. That was amazing. I can't wait to keep an eye on everything that you're doing. How can people kind of get in touch with you, or can they follow you on social media? What's the best way?
Yeah, so I am on Twitter. It's at HIRR4. So I couldn't nab Hera as a username, so I went with the number
four. That's pretty good.
And of course, you can find Possible's work at wearepossible.org. And particularly the Car Free Cities campaign is just wearepossible.org/Car Free Cities.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Hera. It was brilliant to talk to you.
Thank you, Hannah. This has been fun.
You can use the Go Jauntly app to find curated walks based on your location. Simple photo guides help you navigate, while nifty tips point out things of interest, hidden gems, and places to eat. Walking challenges have been designed to help motivate you to walk more, from distance challenges to daily steps challenges. The choice is yours. You can download the app for free on the App Store or the Play Store. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Nature Bants. Don't forget to rate it and subscribe to the whole series. If you like what you've heard today, please do share this episode with your family and friends. Nature Bants was brought to you by Go Jauntly, a free, multi-award-winning walking, wayfinding, and nature connection app. To find out more, please visit gojauntly.com and discover a world of outdoor adventure on your doorstep and beyond.